Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Dug my way out, blood and fire. Bad decisions, that's alright. Welcome to my silly life. Mistreated, this place misunderstood.
And you're listening to Windy City Queercast, show number 403. I'm Amy Matheny, and I hope you all had a great Super Bowl Sunday and a great blizzard 2011, the one we all won't forget, except I wasn't in Chicago. So I was in the midst of this winter storm that covered, 40% of the United States last week, but I know many of you are still looking at the after effects of it all, and it did impact hundreds of millions of people across the U.S., so I hope you and yours were safe and warm. This show, speaking of you and yours, gay parenting has become all the rage over the past decade, I would say. The gay-by boom, gay men and lesbians becoming parents through many various and sundry ways. Either they are children they are raising from previous heterosexual relationships, parents that decide, how do we as two men or two women become a family and bring a child or children into our home? Well, there is a new book called And Baby Makes More, Known Donors, Queer Parents, and Our Unexpected Families. It's a collection of essays, really, from many different voices telling you what it was like, their journey into gay parenting. So Mary Bowers, one of the contributors to that collection, is going to be here with me on the show to tell her very unique story and also to give some insight into this book, and if it's something that you might want to pick up, if parenting is something that you're considering. Also, the new Javier Bardem film, which has been nominated for an Oscar and was nominated for a Golden Globe, Beautiful. Richard Knight Jr. is telling us if it's a beautiful film or not and whether or not you should see it. Plus, Kirk Williamson with me on the news, and there's a lot going on. So it's a big show, so we're going to kick it off right now.
Hi, I'm a Miller Lite Brewmaster.
Yeah, and I'm a Miller Lite Drinkmaster.
It's the Brewmaster Drinkmaster Show.
I just created a revolutionary aluminum pint bottle. Great new way to enjoy the taste of Miller Lite.
Wow. See, I just designed a new game day delicacy to be enjoyed with your great tasting beer, the 8-layer dip.
Well, the aluminum pint has a wider mouth, giving every sip a superior flow that delivers the great taste.
That's terrific. Most people flow from beef to bean to sour cream to cheese to guacamole to salsa to veggies. See, I'm not most people, though. I flow all the way to jambalaya.
Huh. Also, it's got a resealable cap that makes sure every sip tastes as fresh as the first.
Well, my dip is so hearty, it can last from a day game to a night game.
This isn't a competition, you know.
Okay, fine. You advance the science of drinking great-tasting beer, and I advance the art of enjoying it.
Introducing the new aluminum pint bottle from Miller Lite. Just another way for you to enjoy the great taste. Miller Lite. Great taste, less filling. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News. Illinois Governor Pat Quinn signed the Illinois Religious Freedom Protection and Civil Union Act January 31st at the Chicago Cultural Center, attracting about 1,000 attendees. The measure establishes civil unions, giving same-sex couples and heterosexual couples most of the state-level rights and responsibilities of marriage.
The Iowa House of Representatives passed a measure on February 1st to send to voters a constitutional amendment that would ban same-sex marriage, civil unions, and any other recognition of same-sex couples. The vote was 62-37. It passed despite the pleas of 19-year-old college student Zach Walls, who was raised by a same-sex couple. Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstal has vowed to block the measure's advance in that chamber. To make it to the ballot in 2013 at the earliest, the amendment would have to pass both houses of the legislature twice in two consecutive sessions.
An investigation has revealed that the United States Army ignored warnings not to send out Private First Class Bradley Manning over to Iraq. Manning has been accused of sending military documents to WikiLeaks. Manning's supervisor at Fort Drum cautioned others about the privates who allegedly had tossed chairs at colleagues and shouted at his superiors. However, Army officials figured they badly needed intelligence analysts.
In Indiana, the Gary School District has settled a suit filed by Lambda Legal on behalf of K.K. Logan, a transgendered student. The West Side High School principal physically blocked Logan, who is male to female transgender, from entering the prom. The school district now has LGBT-inclusive school policies.
Confessions of a Gay Anchorman, the new memoir from Charles Perez, has stirred up controversy in his former home of New York. Perez alleges that most of the staff are mean and overpaid, including Sam Champion, the openly gay meteorologist on Good Morning America. Perez's time in Miami, where he worked after New York, was stormy as well. He claims that he was fired because of his growing reputation as an out gay journalist.
The Democratic National Committee has chosen Charlotte, North Carolina, as the location of its 2012 convention, which will be held the week of September 3rd.
In New York City, model Renato Seabra has pled not guilty to castrating and killing gay Portuguese journalist Carlos Castro. Seabra, 21, was in a relationship with Castro, 65, but has claimed that he attacked the journalist to exorcise himself of homosexual demons. Papers reported that Seabra, who was under psychiatric care, stabbed Castro and cut off his testicles with a corkscrew.
Atlantis Events Incorporated announced that it set sail on the largest gay cruise ever on February 6th on board Royal Caribbean International's Allure of the Seas with nearly 5,400 gay and lesbian guests. The company also confirmed that it has chartered Allure of the Seas for another sail in 2012.
Democratic United States Representatives Gwen Moore, Barney Frank, Tammy Baldwin, Jared Polis, and David Cicilline wrote to the Secretaries of Defense and Veterans Affairs to ensure that gays and lesbians discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell get the benefits they earned, according to a press release from Baldwin's office. The letters ask Secretaries Robert Gates and Eric Shinseki to address the issue of discharge characterizations in the repeal process. Some gay and lesbian service members discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell or previous policies may have been cut off from access to health care for veterans, education through the GI Bill, and other benefits.
In Georgia, a group of ministers has banded together to defend a gay man, Keith Staples, after his home was burned down in an apparent hate crime. Georgia is one of the few states that does not have a hate crimes law on the state level, although there is a federal hate crimes act.
In Vonore, Tennessee, lesbian couple Laura and Carol Ann Stute have accused a neighbor of committing a hate crime when their home was set on fire. The Stutes found the word queers on the side of their garage. The couple also alleges that the neighbor threatened to poison their dogs, with one pet dying after an incident.
CNN reporter Anderson Cooper and his news crew were attacked over two consecutive days while covering the goings-on in Egypt. Cooper was punched at least 10 times on February 2nd. Reporters Christiane Amanpour and Katie Couric have also been harassed.
In world news, in Uganda, 22-year-old Enoch Nsubuga has reportedly confessed to killing gay rights activist David Kato. The head of Uganda's national police said that Nsubuga was an ex-con who worked in Kato's garden.
Zubuga has allegedly claimed that Cato promised to pay him money for having sex with him, but that the victim did not pay. He then told authorities that he took a hammer and fatally beat Cato. The police are saying that the attack was not a hate crime.
A study conducted at Montreal's Concordia University has found a connection between homophobia and illness. It turns out that subjects who were homophobic suffered disruption of the stress hormone cortisol, resulting in everything from memory loss to high blood pressure.
In France, the Constitutional Council backed legislation that basically bans same-sex marriage. The council ruled that codified references to marriage as a heterosexual institution did not conflict with the Constitution, but added that the legislature could alter the law if it wanted. Same-sex couples in France are allowed civil unions. However, advocates say that unions do not afford the same number of rights as marriage.
In Argentina, more than 1,300 same-sex marriages have taken place after a marriage equality law went into effect. Most of the marriages were between men who had cohabitated for more than 12 years. Argentina became the first Latin American country to legalize same-sex marriage last summer.
In entertainment news, stop the presses! New Kids on the Block singer Jonathan Knight is officially out of the closet. Pop star Tiffany was thought to have outed Knight recently, but he said that he has been open about his sexuality for 2 decades. He added, "I have lived my life very openly and have never hidden the fact that I am gay."
James Franco is going to be on The Great White Way, joining Nicole Kidman in a Broadway production of Tennessee Williams' drama Sweet Bird of Youth. Franco will portray Chance Wayne, the younger lover of an older movie star who goes with her on a trip home. Paul Newman and Geraldine Page co-starred in the original Broadway production.
Kevin Alejandro has suggested that his romantic True Blood relationship with Lafayette, played by Nelson Ellis, will continue to evolve. True Blood's fourth season will start June 12th on HBO.
Jane Lynch, who plays Sue Sylvester on TV's Glee, wants Sir Elton John to guest star on the show. Lynch's co-star, Matthew Morrison, recently said that John could play Sue's love interest. Lynch told People magazine, "I love that idea and I'm all over it."
On a recent episode of her talk show, Oprah Winfrey focused on a quarter century of gay issues. Winfrey pointed out that her show, now in its 25th and final season, has produced more than 120 programs devoted to gay and lesbian people.
Doctor Who actor Matt Smith will take on a different kind of role when he portrays gay author Christopher Isherwood for a 90-minute BBC Two special, Christopher and His Kind. Isherwood, who died in 1986 at the age of 81, wrote the novel A Single Man in 1964, a book that was turned into the 2009 film starring Colin Firth.
And in the upcoming movie Beginners, Ewan McGregor plays Oliver, a man who meets the unpredictable Anna months after his father Hal, played by Christopher Plummer, has passed away. Oliver is in for a shock when he realizes that his father came out of the closet after 44 years in marriage to live a full life. ER's Goran Visnjic portrays Hal's younger lover. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
I'm Richard Knight Jr., and here's your Night at the Movies Minute. Beautiful, spelled B-I-U-T-I-F-U-L, is the new film from Mexican writer-director Alejandro González Iñárritu, making his return to cinemas for the first time since 2006's masterful, passionate global drama Babel. Iñárritu, or it might be Iñárritu, I'm going to say Iñárritu's, canvas is much smaller this time out. He focuses exclusively on the world Huxball, a small-time criminal in Barcelona involved in a series of vice activities, from drugs to importing illegal workers to work on construction sites. Unlike his ruthless business partners, which include a younger brother, Huxball has a conscience and tries to bring a touch of dignity to his illegal dealings. Meanwhile, the mother of Huxball's two children is struggling with various addictions, and so he's also shouldering the responsibility of raising the two kids alone. At the outset of the film, we discover that Huxball, who has a lot of dependents, is also suffering from an incurable illness with only weeks to live, and we follow him about as he desperately tries to put his affairs in order and take care of those around him. The part was made to order for Javier Bardem's moody, still waters running deep acting style, and with his famous smoldering eyes and good looks, even in his desiccated state, he's deeply affecting. The actor who carries the film on his shoulders, along with all those dependents, essays a portrait of a man that long ago learned to compartmentalize his intricate day-to-day existence. The lyrically crafted, deliberately paced film is dedicated to Inarritu's father, and it is a credit to both his writing and Barton's intuitive acting process that finally frees the title of the film, Beautiful, from its inherent sense of irony. I'm Richard Knight Jr., and that's your Night at the Movies Minute.
Hi, this is Patrick Bristow, and you are listening to the Windy City Queercast. What do you think of that?
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater. Music. Dance. Art. Performance. Provocative. Hilarious. Exciting.
Weird. Innovative. Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of February 7th, 2011, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Tickets are selling quickly to Travels with My Aunt. Don't miss what the Chicago Tribune is calling sophisticated and wry, light and fanciful, and the Chicago Sun-Times proclaims is vivid, supremely well-acted, delightful, highly recommended. Many performances are already sold out. Order your tickets today at writerstheater.org.
In Brett Nouveau's Do the Hustle, Sam and Eddie are more than just a father and son. They're a crack team of hustlers always looking for the next mark. Sam, a teenager who practically raised himself, now wants to strike out on his own. Eddie doesn't want to let his son go without one final hustle. Do the Hustle is playing now. Buy tickets at writerstheater.org.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hello, Deb Pierce here, letting you know that we'd love to hear back from you. So go ahead. You know you want to. Post a comment.
I am on a lonely road and I am traveling, 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 looking for something. What can it be? Oh, I hate you some. I hate you some. I love you some. Strong, I wanna live alone, I wanna belong to the living, alive, alive, I wanna get up and drive, wanna wreck my stockings in some jukebox dive. Do you want, do you want, do you wanna dance with me, baby? Do you wanna take a chance on maybe finding some sweet romance with me, baby? Well,
according to the 2000 U.S. Census, there are approximately 600,000 same-sex couples in the U.S. There's probably more now since it's 2010. And many of them want the experience of having children. Over the past decade, there has been an increase in fertility options and advances in legislation in many states, making parenting more accessible for GLBT couples. But beyond the statistics and resources, what is the experience of becoming a parent? And what does that truly mean for us as GLBT people? A new book, And Baby Makes More, Known Donors, Queer Parents, and Our Unexpected Families, is a collection of essays from queer moms and dads. And this collection really hits home in its humor, specificity, humanity, and totally unique perspective from its many gay parents. It also helps to redefine what is family and uncover the rewards and struggles on the journey of gay parenting. Mary Bowers is one of the contributors to the book, a Chicago graphic artist and writer whose essay, The D Word, kicks off the collection of stories and gives us some insight into her very own family. Hey, Mary, how are you?
Hey, Amy, doing great.
Good. Hey, tell me, had you always wanted to be a parent? I mean, is this one of these things that you'd known from a young age that you wanted to be a mom?
Yeah, absolutely. It just was a given. When I came out to my parents, one of the things my mom said was, you'll never be a parent. You'll never be normal. You'll never be regular. You'll never be a family. But, you know, she's not always right.
Now, did you know how you wanted that to look? I mean, was that something you knew before you were in your significant partnership, your with your life partner now? Or was it something that you thought, oh, I have this guy friend and we'll do it, or I wouldn't want to know the father, or I would want to adopt? Did you know what it would look like?
Not really. I mean, even in college, I always thought about my kids and my family, but I don't know. I guess maybe I thought some magic unicorn was going to come drop them off. But I never really thought about, well, how is that actually going to work?
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's why there's a lot of, I know a lot of gay moms in particular who are a little bit older. And I think that whole thing of, like, how actually is this going to work? It takes some time to figure out. Not so much now as it used to because the ground's been laid. But at first it's like, okay, how are we going to get this baby?
Yeah. Now, was this something that when you met your partner, you both knew that you wanted for your future together? Is that an important conversation you think to have?
Yeah, we had been dating for 3 months when we went to Howard Brown to an alternative insemination weekend workshop. So
wow, you started off early.
Oh, yeah.
See how the lesbian stereotypes are so good. You'd already had the U-Haul. You'd turned it in 3 months later.
We didn't do the U-Haul for a year. We were really proud of ourselves that we didn't move in for a year. But we were in that workshop 3 months into the relationship.
And what was the workshop?
It was called, I think, called Alternative Insemination. It was at Howard Brown. It was adoption, surrogate parenting, sperm donor, all the different possible ways that gays could go about acquiring children.
Yeah. And what made, now I know that you wanted to know your donor, or that was the path that you all started down. And you went on a bit of a journey just with that one decision.
Right.
Talk about that a little bit.
Well, you know, when I was in college, I had a boss who was adopted, and he was really obsessed with his biological parents and who they were, and the terms of the adoption dictated that he probably would never know that information. And it really stuck in my head, listening to him talk about his really wanting to know who his parents were and feeling kind of at a loss for not knowing that. Like, that just stuck in my head. And as a really, like, a lifelong navel gazer myself, I just couldn't imagine me not knowing who half of my maternity or paternity was. Mm-hmm. So just from that perspective, for whatever validity it has or doesn't have, it seemed to me that I wanted a parent that my kids could know from the time they were little kids, just to take out that mystery of who's this half of me that I don't know.
So did you have qualifications you were looking for in a donor?
You know, it's funny how that works. I was thinking about it this morning. Like, if you're straight and, you know, you're a female, you just kind of like, you don't look at your husband and say, maybe I could do better. Let's look around and see, you know, let's see if we can find someone with more hair on their head or whatever.
Right, let's shop.
Yeah, but that's like, so you don't. But then when you have to go out and find your donor, it's almost like this hunter-gatherer thing clicks in, and it's like, he has to be 6'4", and he has to be able to sing, and he has to be able, you know, like all of a sudden you're like, you want the best specimen out there.
Mm-hmm.
So from the get-go, we wanted somebody tall because we're both on the shorter end, and, you know, we both have tall envy. I guess everybody does. And I really wanted somebody hairless because it's my thing, but we really got the contrary to that. And I mean, it's kind of ridiculous in retrospect to, you know, you even come up with these criteria.
Right.
But I just think it's also kind of natural when you think, oh, I could have my choice of anything. Oh,
yeah.
let's sit down, you know, but.
Yeah. I mean, you might say, well, I want him to look like the one of us that's not carrying the child, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if
mm-hmm.
your partner was brunette and you were blonde, you might want to pick a brunette. Or
I don't know
if those questions go in. But reading your story, what I realize is you can have those criteria, but there's a whole different emotional criteria. And I remember one night, in my 20s, I was with a bunch of guys and bunch of straight guys, which weirdly enough, I used to always find all the straight theater guys. And we were all talking one time, and we tabbed the whole conversation sacred sperm. Like, did people have sacred sperm or not? There was really no middle ground. And I thought that your essay really kicked off the fact of whether people feel attached or detached from their sperm. And it's really not one or the other, is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good point. Like, I think at first it started out like, who's our best looking friend? That's what we wanted. But then once you start talking to people, it's like, who's going to work in this really hyper unconventional relationship? You know, and who can you really think that you can be in there for the long haul with? You know, we're talking 18 years or the rest of our lives in a relationship with the donor. And who's going to navigate all the uncertainties of this relationship. So that becomes way, starts to become way more important.
Yeah. And the qualities of that for you were what, when you found Chip?
Openness, really just openness. Because I didn't, I think the essay reflects a lot of fear, and a lot of essays in the book reflect a lot of fear. Like, what's going to happen if he wants the kids? What's going to happen if he wants to be a parent? So at first there's a, there's just so much fear, and it's so unknown, but I think I had the wherewithal from the beginning to say the most important thing, and Sarah too, like, we want our kids to be happy, and we want our kids to be healthy, and we want our kids to be confident, and we don't want secrets, and we don't want, I don't want to say lies, because I wouldn't out and out lie to them, but we don't want to fabricate the truth or need the truth to make us more comfortable.
Right.
We really want as much openness as possible in this relationship. And I think that was really, you know, something that was, Chip was too. It was kind of like, well, we don't know what it's going to look like. We have no idea. And we're willing to go with that uncertainty. And we're willing to really kind of just trust things that come up.
Yeah.
And other donors didn't really have that. Like, there's one in the book. He's an amazing man. He'll make an amazing father, and that's what he needs to be. He needed to be a father. That's what he wanted. Mm-hmm. He didn't want uncertainty. He, you know, that. And I hope that he finds that for himself one day. But it's really rare to find someone to say, "You want to go on this journey with me?" It's like, "Sure. Where are we going?" "I don't know."
Yeah.
You know, how will we know when we get there? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's a massive leap of faith that I imagine that when you finally, you know, spend the time. And as you said, it took like over a year for you to get pregnant. So there's even this entire journey of the insemination before the child even comes, that builds this relationship, that really it's just a huge leap of faith and a gut and knowing that this is somebody, as you said, that you can bank some trust in. And the one thing that was very interesting to me was this concept of the daddy. And obviously that's unique with lesbian couples. And maybe, you know, if we were talking about a story in the essay around two dads, it might be the mommy. But talk to me about this concept of the daddy and, you know, one of you all being called daddy, or would Chip be seen as daddy? The search for your daughter to want to have a daddy. Did you expect that to be such a big theme in the early part of her life?
I guess if you could say there was one thing we were close-minded to at first, it was the daddy thing. We were just really clear, and Chip was clear too. You know, we said, "You're not the daddy." He's like, "I don't want to be." You know, he didn't want to be daddy. We didn't want him to be daddy. So we were all in agreement on that, but, you know, Jessie wasn't our daughter.
When she arrived, she got a say in this little journey, didn't she?
She was from such a young age, and maybe it's because he was around all the time. Like, I don't know, because he was around. He's a very close friend. They live a half a block away.
Right.
You know, maybe she heard conversations, so that's why she was so interested. Or maybe she would have been interested anyway. You know, I'll never know. But from a
mainstream
age, she's like,
society, there's always a mainstream with kids with two moms or two dads. They're still growing up in a very heterosexual society where there's a mommy and a daddy, right?
Well, and she went to this Catholic preschool for a year, and these people, God bless them, man, they were moms and dads, and they were together, and nobody was divorced, and the dads were very active. So she saw moms and dads all the time. She saw very active dads in other kids' lives, and I think that, you know, that played a part in it too. She's like, okay, I want to fit into this. Where do I fit in? You need to tell me. So we did.
Yeah.
You know, you can't tell a girl who's about to turn three, you can't explain donor to her.
Right.
You know, there's no way to describe that. So it was just basically at that point a huge surrender. And I told her, because I was alone with her at the time when she asked, you know, I said, "Chip is your daddy." And then I had to go like racing to Sarah and Chip going, "I hope you guys are okay with this."
Yeah. Well, for a while she was calling you daddy, right?
Right. Yeah.
She was kind of, it was kind of that, reminded me of that children's book. I think it's a little duck or something. And he goes around to everything saying, are you my mother? And, you know, it's like a steam shovel.
Right.
And it's like, are you my mother?
Right.
And yeah, that was kind of what Jesse was doing, right? Going around and
right.
calling lots of things daddy.
And I wanted to be like, it was really great at first. I'm like, I'm special. Because when there's two moms, no,
yeah.
neither of you are really particularly special. Like, really, honestly, one of you is disposable because there's always the other one.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, I'm the daddy. But, you know, that's just I'm not. I'm not her daddy. And I can't. That didn't last very long, that, you know, we'll just go with this. And that was also one of the things we wanted to avoid.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to confuse my kid.
Yeah.
Again, to feed or something, just because it makes me more comfortable.
Yeah. Now, this essay, which is very funny, by the way, and very, very moving and very funny and very honest, is really about the conception. The first time you all went through this journey as a couple with Jesse. But you have a second child. So even though that story's not there, share a little bit of that with us. You know, was the second child easier, and what was different about the second child?
Easier in what way?
That you knew what to do. Have you used the same donor for both children?
Yeah, same donor.
Yeah, and did you carry both children or?
No, Sarah carried our son. He's he's just about to turn three now, and it's funny, he's at the same age Jesse was, and he doesn't seem to any interest whatsoever in his paternity. He doesn't ever ask. And
he wants to be the man of the house. That's what he's seeing.
Yeah. he'll call Chip daddy because Jesse does it, but it just doesn't seem to even be on his radar to even think about it. So it's kind of interesting to see the personality difference there.
Yeah. But did you feel like going through it a second time, a little more seasoned, like we know what to expect and a little more relaxed with the process?
Yeah. And that whole thing of like, is he going to want the kids? Is he going to want custody? Like, you know, we'd already been in this relationship for 4 years, so we didn't have that fear anymore.
Right.
And we could just flow with it. And legally, we still had to do a lot of the same things.
Right.
Like I think the donor agreement and things like that, which, you know, it seems, the first time it just seems so hypercritical, must have on paper, and the second time it just seemed like, well, whatever. But we actually had to have it not because of our fear, but because of the state and for the adoption process to go through.
Right.
We had to do that.
Yeah, just to clarify, Chip had to sign over his consent to you two, and then Sarah would have had to adopt Jesse, and they can we live in a state that allows us to do that, and I think that's great. And many more states now are allowing gay and lesbian people to adopt or have second parent adoption, which is, I think, some of the great changes that have happened in the past 10 years. I'm sure that people obviously see you out as a family, and if there are gay men or lesbian women who dream of being a parent, people might come up to you, find an opportunity to approach you and talk to you about your story. But I'm sure it's been very validating to put a piece of your story into this book with other gay parents. How did you get involved with this book?
I just happened to be, I wrote this memoir, which I thought would be, you know, a big hot bestseller, but it wasn't, about the process of being gay and creating a family. So I had this 300-page manuscript that no agent was really all that interested in. And so I started my next writing project, which was a novel. So I started taking those essays from the memoir and then polishing them into self-contained pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to come across, I do, like, I'll get on Google and I'll just Google, like, submission gay essay, just to see, you know, what's out there. And this just happened to be out there, the submission process for this anthology. So I took one of the parts of the book and then turned it into a self-contained piece and submitted it.
Wow. So it was obviously meant to be a part of this collection. Have you gotten to meet other writers and contributors from the book? Because they're from all over, U.S. and Canada.
I know it's like there's a huge chunk of them from Canada because it's a Canadian publisher, and then there seems to be another huge chunk on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. But I went up to Toronto with Chip, actually. We drove up for a reading. The editor was like, hey, you want to come do a reading in Toronto? We can't pay you. And I'm like, sure.
Yeah, it's a great city.
So we drove up one day and drove back the next. And then there was another reading in New York City. So we flew out for that, Sarah and I. And now this was basically the editor and her donor said, hey, we're coming to Chicago. Why don't we do a reading in Chicago?
Yeah.
And it's been really fun to develop. Oh, we went to Duluth with the editor and her uh-huh. family.
Uh-huh.
So it's just been really fun to develop relationships with these folks.
Well, there's no better place to have a reading of this book than Women and Children First Books, who have for decades really been on the forefront and pioneering the paths for queer families. And so there is going to be a reading on Thursday, February 17th at 7:30 at Women and Kids. And there will be some readings and a question and answer session after the reading for the book. And I really encourage everybody to go out. We will have it linked in our show notes, not only Women and Children First Book, so you can get details on the reading, but we will also link the publisher for the book in case you're listening and you live outside the Chicago area, as many of you do, so you can pick up this book. I've already, once starting reading it, I started emailing friends of mine who I know are either currently trying to get pregnant or want to get pregnant. So and Baby Makes More is a really great gift or great resource for you or for somebody you know who is interested in parenting. And Mary, I think it's probably not lost on you that right around this time you are doing this book and even to the point of this reading, that an Oscar nominated film, The Kids Are All Right, really shows the success of parenting and the realities, the rewards and the realities of parenting. Did you think it was important that a film like that has finally etched itself into the mainstream?
I have not seen the film yet.
Oh, you haven't seen it, but you know what it's about. So you know, it's about two lesbian moms with teenage kids, which, you know, is being treated as if, you know, any other film about any other story.
Right.
Do you feel that
that's
a good thing?
It definitely was unexpected that that would be such a big hit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's powerful that our stories are being told in a mainstream way with Modern Family, or, you know, having the two guys adopting the little girl and that just being a part of the story, or
right.
The Kids
yeah,
Are All
definitely.
Right. The Kids Are All Right, I think, is so relatable to straight couples that I know, because it's just about family. And it just happens mm-hmm. to have, you know, two same-sex moms as the parents. So it's obviously, you know, this is something that is only going to grow and expand. And so this book, this collection, really adds to the voices of people living in the world of gay parenting. So, Mary, we are happy that you added your voice, and so glad that you were on the show with us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
And Baby Makes More, Known Donors, Queer Parents, and Our Unexpected Families is available now on Insomniac Press. You can check that out at insomniacpress.com. We'll have that linked in our show notes. You can also pick it up, I'm sure, in any of your gay or gay-friendly bookstores in town. We always ask you to support those first if you can, and then purchasing online with resources there. So check out the reading Thursday, February 17th, if you happen to be in the Chicago area, at 7:30 at Women and Children First Books in Andersonville. Thanks so much, Mary.
You're welcome.
Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY.
Well, everybody, I hope this is a warmer and less painful week for all of you. Freezing temperatures maybe on the rise, just a little bit more comfortable, and backs and shoulders and necks and limbs, all from that shoveling excursion of last week, all finally coming back into repair. We are fast approaching the big Valentine's Day, the big V-Day, and what are you going to do special with your loved one? Maybe we'll be talking about that in the next show. I hope you have a great week. Thanks for being with me, and I can't wait to tell you more about about being out west, which is where I've been the past couple of weeks. And perhaps one of my upcoming podcasts will tell you a little bit about my travels. But for today and for this week, I hope you have great travels wherever you are. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.